Radio Prague News. Transport unions have postponed a strike due for Monday in order to give Parliament time to meet their demands. The Czech Doctors' Chamber has approved a new set of guidelines relating to care for terminally ill patients. And the police has launched an investigation into Prague City Hall's controversial open card project. Transport unions have announced a decision to postpone a strike set for Monday morning until Thursday in order to give Parliament time to meet their demands. The move came after the Cabinet agreed at an emergency meeting on Thursday night to abolish proposed tax changes which would reduce employee benefits. At the direct intervention of Prime Minister Jan Fischer, transport unions agreed on Friday to give Parliament a few more days to scrap the respective amendment from the proposed tax changes. Union leaders have threatened to go on an indefinite strike if their grievances are not addressed. The Czech Doctors' Chamber has approved a new set of guidelines relating to care for terminally ill patients. According to the Daily Lidové Noviny, which broke the story on Friday, doctors will have the option to decide when to stop giving terminally ill patients intensive treatment and concentrate merely on easing the patient's pain and discomfort. This would concern predominantly patients in a coma and patients with multiple organ failure. The doctors' chamber has stressed that this is not to be interpreted as euthanasia. Nevertheless, it is being described by doctors as a revolution in Czech medicine. The police has launched an investigation into Prague City Hall's controversial open card project. The multi-purpose open card was launched last year to replace city transport passes as well as library, museum and other types of service cards. However, the project has not met the intended goal and, at a cost of over 800 million crowns, has come under attack for being grossly overpriced. Three independent audits have already been conducted, each concluding that the project was badly conceived and reporting untraceable invoices and a lack of transparency in commissioning. Critics say the main tender was tailored to the company Haggis and lots of other companies were commissioned to do work that was not essentially necessary. Prime Minister Jan Fischer has said he wants to ask the Czech Intelligence Service, BIS, to cooperate in the police investigation into the purchase of armoured personnel carriers for the Czech Army. The contract with Steyr is being investigated on suspicion of corruption after a Czech daily quoted former executives from the Austrian firm as saying that Czech political parties had received bribes in connection with the deal. The Prime Minister said his request for BIS involvement did not imply a lack of trust in the police investigation, but was based on the belief that the intelligence service might have valuable information on the case, which might otherwise be considered classified. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming weekend is expected to be partly cloudy, with intervals of rain and shine, and day temperatures hovering at around 9 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague and I'm Sarah Borufka. Welcome to the program. Today, the Czech ice hockey team's early exit from the Olympics was a disappointment for many sports fans, but how bad is the state of Czech hockey, really? A new book examines Czech-Austrian relations and how both countries have developed since the end of the Cold War. And around the Czech Republic, a lot is being done by just one organization to rescue injured wild animals like birds and hedgehogs.
With the babies, let's say, people could get more knowledge on what to do when they find baby animals.
Then, later in the program, we talk to Janek Jaros, who runs Prague's Modernista store, where you can buy classic Czech furniture and much more. All of that and more coming up, so do stay with us. While the Czech Republic has already taken a respectable 5 medals at the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, the early exit of the country's ice hockey players has been a blow to Czech sports fans. Indeed, Wednesday's 2-0 defeat to Finland was the 4th time in a row that the Czechs have been knocked out in the quarterfinals of a major tournament. A decade ago, they were among the world's best. So where is Czech hockey going wrong today? Jan Wellinger has the story.
The Czech national hockey team had a great run at the turn of the millennium, winning not only at the Nagano Olympics, but 3 straight world championships. Now those days seem far away. In Vancouver, after exiting in the quarterfinal stage yet again, the Czech team has lost its former luster, and many are saying substantial changes will now be needed. A little earlier, I spoke to Martin Hosták, a respected Czech TV commentator and former NHL player. He agrees the situation needs to be faced head on.
Every game is different, and you can lose one game by coincidence, bad luck, or you're not prepared exactly for the top moment. But I don't think this is a coincidence. I think we have some problem in the Czech hockey, and we have to face it, and we have to do something about it. It's not just the national team, it's the junior national teams as well. They don't have pretty good results in their under 18 or under 20 championships, and that says we are after the top nations. We are not at the top right now.
According to Hosták and others, one key factor is that up-and-coming players today lack the necessary motivation compared to players who grew up under communism and saw hockey not only as financially rewarding, but also as a means of making it abroad. By comparison, today's coaches have to juggle lesser or less driven players and only hope that someone will step up. Certainly new players of rarer caliber are missing, something evidenced by the drop in the team's play at Vancouver, when Jaromír Jágr, still a star at 38, was absent for much of the Czechs' game against Latvia. At the same time, hockey commentator Martin Hosták says the outlook is not completely bleak. At Vancouver 2010, some on the Czech team played exceptionally well and registered on the radar.
I'm optimistic for young players which showed their skills and boldness to go in the game and go one against one and make their moves, and they were not afraid to go from the opponent's net. Krejci or Fleischmann, Milan Michalek as well. These players are future of the Czech hockey, and I hope they will be better and better every year, and they can start to build up a new team.
The next big event on the calendar will be the World Championship in neighboring Germany in May, which Martin Hosták points out will by necessity see a different and arguably weaker Czech roster than in Vancouver. Still, it could also be an opportunity for newer players to make their mark. Some would argue, given the team's recent track record, that they have little to lose.
Jan Wellinger reporting. Now let's turn to a book that's just been published here. The Czech Republic and neighboring Austria share centuries of common history, but in recent times, relations between the two states have often been strained. How the countries have developed since 1989 is the focus of a new anthology by a group of Austrian and Czech academics. Jan Richter was at the Czech launch of the book and has this report.
The Czech Republic and Austria after the end of the Cold War, Different Ways into New Europe, is the title of a new book that was launched at the Austrian Cultural Forum in Prague on Thursday. It features texts by Czech and Austrian authors that look into various aspects of both countries' development in the last 2 decades. The book's editor is Professor Gernot Heiss from the University of Vienna.
Specialists on economic history, on political science, in social development, they wrote articles about the Austrian problems and about the Czech problems, yeah? And we put it together, and you, if you read these articles, you will find not only this strong differences from Czechoslovakia and then the Czech Republic after 89, after the Velvet Revolution, but what I find very interesting is also that there are similarities because of the international development.
Although each country had a very different starting point following the end of the Cold War, Professor Hai says certain parallels do stand out, such as joining the European Union and the adoption of some neoliberal principles. For nearly four centuries, Czechs and Austrians lived in one country, which broke up after the First World War. But today, Czech-Austrian relations are strained by a number of issues. These include the post-war expulsion of ethnic Germans from Czechoslovakia, Austrian opposition to the Czech nuclear power plant in Temelín, and the ambivalent Austrian position on Czech accession to the EU. Speaking about the situation in Austria, Professor Hai says these topics are often abused by populist politicians.
The Czech always had a very bad image in Austria as a stereotype, yeah, without foundation. Since the Habsburg monarchy, it was always a little bit resentment. And it's very curious that all these old resentments come up sometimes in the if there are populist movements, which we have very strong in Austria, they are coming up again, yeah, and you don't know why, and there is no foundation in the reality.
The Czech Republic and Austria after the end of the Cold War, different ways into new Europe, comes in Czech and German versions for the two different markets.
Thanks for that, Jan. 11 years ago, the Czech Union for Nature Conservation started opening rescue centers for injured wild animals all over the Czech Republic. To date, 26 centers have been opened, and last year alone over 10,000 animals were brought to a rescue center. I talked to the organization's member Markéta Peková about issues in rescuing wild animals and how the situation is changing.
Overall, I think it's been better since people are getting more information and they know what to do, that there is such an option that if they find a rabbit or a raptor that they can call certain people and they will take care of them. So that's one good thing. The other thing is that unfortunately with more cars, there are more cases with animals get killed by cars. But overall, it's been more positive since the information is spreading out.
And which animals of all the wild living animals in the Czech Republic are most affected, or which ones do you see most in those centers?
Definitely birds, because of the electricity poles, they get burned by them. Or, you know, the glass buildings and, let's say, bus stops. Animals don't see that it's a glass, so they get into it and they die mostly, or they break their wings or whatever. A lot of hedgehogs are being brought to our centers because people find the babies, and in the fall, a lot of the times, the hedgehogs are not as big as they should be for hibernation, for winter. So they bring them to us and we take care of them, and then in the spring we release them.
And how can humans modify their behavior so that there is less such cases? Is there easy things that we can avoid doing?
With the babies, let's say, people could get more knowledge on what to do when they find baby animals. A lot of the times people take like a little rabbit or small deer, they touch it. And then a lot of the times the babies are just waiting for their mothers to come and feed them and stuff. They're just like making themselves invisible, let's say. But people come, touch them, and then it's the end because the mom will refuse to take care of it. Again, there are problems with little birds because in the spring when they're learning to fly, people find them and they think, oh, it's a lost baby bird and we have to take care of it. We have to bring it to the station. But that's a problem because the mothers or the parents would take care of it, but they just take it out of the system.
That was Markéta Peková speaking there. And now it's time for this news, for this week's business news, for which I'm joined by Chris Johnstone.
A loan of around 2.5 billion Czech crowns, or around 130 million US dollars, to Czech Airlines is being probed by the European Commission because of suspicions it could involve illegal aid. The loan to the carrier was made by state company Osinek in April last year when Czech Airlines faced a cash crisis. The loan was initially secured against some of the airline's assets, but these were later freed up, meaning that no strings were attached to it. The Commission can demand the loan be repaid and impose a fine if illegal aid is found.
Meanwhile, state-owned power giant ČEZ has announced a record profit of 51.9 billion crowns for 2009. That is a jump of 10% on the previous year. ČEZ says it was largely able to ride out last year's slump in electricity sales and prices because it sold much of its production before, when markets were still riding high. Czech demand for electricity dropped by 5.6% in 2009. This year, ČEZ predicts profits will fall back to 46.7 billion crowns, although demand for power is forecast to rise.
South Korean carmaker Hyundai's Czech plant at Nosyvice has taken a first step towards further expansion. The plant has been given environmental clearance to build extra capacity, allowing gearbox production to double from 300,000 to 600,000 a year. That increase is crucial for allowing overall car production at the plant to rise from the current 200,000 to 300,000 by 2011. Some of the extra gearboxes will be shipped to a sister factory across the border in Slovakia.
Prague is the 13th most sought-after location in Europe to buy real estate, according to a survey of developers and investors released this week by PricewaterhouseCoopers and the Urban Land Institute. Regionally, the Czech capital trails Warsaw, which was placed 8th. A local representative of PricewaterhouseCoopers said Prague appeared to have weathered the severe real estate downturn last year, and buying interest from international investors is starting to pick up, thanks to the city's profile as a relatively stable and risk-free location.
The first automated machine offering milk straight from the dairy to the consumer made its debut in the Czech capital this week. The vending machines allowing dairy farmers to sell direct to the public has spread to 60 sites across the country since their Czech launch last autumn. The machines allow farmers to get significantly better prices than if they sell to large processors or to supermarkets, even though every machine costs around 200,000 crowns. But not everybody is welcoming the spread of the milk automats. Chief hygienist Michal Witt warned that the untreated milk should be boiled first, and he highlighted a surge in upset stomachs where fresh milk sales are the strongest because health warnings have been ignored.
Now, in the final part of our program, we bring you a report about a really neat store right here in Prague. Modernista specializes in Czech vintage furniture and other beautiful and decorative items you can only find in the Czech Republic. Ian Willoughby talked to the store's owner, Janek Jaros.
The frame is made of bent beech, which is then either lacquered or veneered or stained.
At the shop Modernista in the center of Prague, owner Janek Jaros describes the production of a replica of a chair by the great Czech designer Jindřich Halabala. As well as replicas, the company deals in original pieces of furniture from the first half of the 20th century, perhaps most notably in the Cubist style, which Jaros describes as Czech-specific. Modernista also sells lamps and other household items, including work by contemporary Czech designers. Janek Jaros told me all about his business when we met the other day.
Well, it's developed quite a lot since 2001. Originally, I only sold restored original furniture. But as time went, I added some licensed reproductions, first of Czech Cubist ceramics and clocks and some metalwork, and then later some Czech Modernist furniture. So it's a fairly mixed bag. I think that the sort of unifying feature of it all is that Modernista concentrates on the first half of the 20th century, furniture, furnishings, decorative objects.
About the original items that you sell, where do you or how do you acquire them?
Well, first you start looking in the obvious places, auctions, second-hand furniture stores, house clearances. But then once you become active in the business, the items start coming to you because there's loads of people who are also involved in the business on a level that's closer to the ground, and they come to you, and then gradually over a course of time a circle of suppliers develops, and then you do not have to devote so much time to scouting. You devote more time to the administration, organization of the business, dealing with your restorers, dealing with people who work for you. Business develops, the format develops with time.
About the Cubist items that you sell, is Cubist furniture and Cubist ceramics particular to Czechoslovakia?
It is particular to Czechoslovakia, or Bohemia, as it was at the time, because we're talking the time before the First World War, when this country was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It is Czech-specific. Nowhere else in the world was it taken to such lengths. So we are the only country with Cubist buildings and Cubist coffee sets and Cubist clocks. And that's what makes the items interesting for people outside this country and for people interested in design in general.
About the replicas that you sell, how do you acquire the rights to make them?
You have to identify the rights holders, usually the descendants of the architects. You have to make sure that, that they have the right and that you got the right people. And then you enter into a legal agreement with them. It's fairly simple. It's like licensing anything else.
Is it so simple to find people who are capable of making those items?
For some items, it is easier. For some items, it's more difficult. For ceramics, it's not so complicated because it's something that people can basically do at home or in a very small workshop. For some of the metalwork, it is harder. It requires a lot of skill, but it also requires some machinery. With some items that require metal plating, for instance, it's becoming very, very hard to manufacture because times have changed a lot, and the metal plating business, the technology has changed enormously because it's very environmentally damaging. So On those items, we have a lot of trouble, and we have to travel very far often or pay a lot of money to get it done. And then moving sort of closer to mid-century, some items that we would love to add to the Modernista range, unfortunately, are impossible to make these days. We were very seriously looking into making a plastic toy, which was originally made in the 1950s, and it became obvious that we couldn't do it. We would have to make so many pieces that it would require such a huge investment into the production and into warehousing and into distribution, because then we would have to distribute to a much wider public, that we had to abandon the idea, unfortunately.
Would you often add new designs to your range?
If we do identify an item that would be interesting for the collection, and we find producers, we always do it. But very often now we stop at the production barrier, because as we are getting closer to the mid-century items, which would be most interesting for us now, it is because these items were made through an industrial process. It's becoming more difficult for us to reproduce them now.
Tell us about the international aspect of your business, and what kind of reaction has your work had, or your items, your range had internationally?
There's always been some international interest. For a while there was a lot of interest in the Cubist line. There were some major exhibition that incorporated Czech Cubism traveling around the world in the early decade of this new millennium, so we were successful in adding our products to the lines sold in the museum shops. We sold in major museums like the V&A and the Metropolitan and some museums in Japan. But the interest has kind of gradually died down, and we only have a few dealers that now sell our items. The trouble is that though Czech Cubism is unique, it's not very well known, and because the items are quite complicated to make, and they're fully licensed, they end up selling for quite a high price, and it then requires a lot of explaining of why it costs so much and what it is, etc., etc. So it's not an easy sell. And as regards our furniture, we've always had people interested who either find our website or get to our website through various other websites where our items are displayed. So there's, like, every day we get some inquiries, and that some of them eventually lead to some sales of smaller furniture items. But you know, some people are quite adventurous, and they will happily have a large piece shipped halfway across the globe. So yeah, Modernista is fairly well known internationally now.
Yannick Jaros was speaking to Ian Willoughby. That edition of The Arts was first broadcast in September. It brings us to the end of today's program. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from myself, Sarah Borufka, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you for listening, and goodbye.